the J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, still some surprising results, but a return to a semblance of normality over the weekend after the absolute carnage of the previous two match days, with the last Wednesday's match day 15 particularly bonkers.
Oh yeah, it was. I was thankful that this was a slightly calmer weekend. Still a few surprises that we'll get into, but yeah, I don't think I've really recovered from last Wednesday. It was absolute mayhem, especially that Kashima game and the shock in the Kawasaki match as well.
Yes, indeed. So after an incident-packed match day 14 the previous weekend, it took the clubhouse lead for wackiest round of the season so far. You will, of course, remember, listeners, Anderson Lopez's Spitgate that's earned him a six-game ban, and Gunbar Osaka players fighting amongst themselves and then taking matters into the stands as well. Match day 15 on Wednesday said, hold my beer, as we had a new front runner for game of the season so far, as Sam's mentioned. Kashima coming from 3-0 down to take a 4-3 lead with two goals in second half stoppage time, only for Tosu to equalise 4-4 with the last touch of the game. And for me, the most shocking result in J1 history. That's a big call, I know, but it was second from bottom Shonan winning 4-0 away at then leaders Kawasaki, who, you might recall, listeners, have won the league twice in a row and four times out of the last five seasons. Sam, we've both said it already, absolute madness. We've got more to come on Wednesday, but those two games led your midweek written roundup for our patrons.
They did, and they consumed almost all of my time when I was watching both games, because all the goals were happening at the same time. It was so difficult to try and keep up, and just the story that was coming out of both games when Sagan were 3-0 up, and then Shonan were just so good in that first 15 minutes of the second half. It was a surprise result, but the performance, like, you could tell that Shonan were just on one in that game, and Kawasaki were terrible. I thought Shonan were so good at pressing high. They caused mistakes. I think a couple of the goals that Kawasaki conceded, the first two, I think are very, very uncharacteristic from them, very poor defensively. But Shonan, you've got to give them so much credit, because throughout the season, they have not looked like scoring in so many games. And for them to go and score four goals against Kawasaki at Todoroki is just absolutely unbelievable. I mean, yeah, full credit to them. But then even that, my rundown got overshadowed by the scenes in the Tosu versus Kashima game, because, yeah, Kashima looked dead and buried at 3-0 down. And then they came back with some incredible fighting display. They scored some very good goals, looked like they'd won it in added time, and then some terrible defending from the corner. Kwon completely out of position, he has to dive back onto the line. Yuma Suzuki is the one who should react, but he doesn't really know why he's in the defensive third. He doesn't know why he's what he's meant to be doing. He doesn't react, and they score, and it was just absolute bedlam from one way to the other in that game. And that's, and it pushed, I think, a 6-1 away win completely down the pecking order. So yeah, unbelievable midweek, probably the best, especially with those two fixtures, probably the best midweek round I've seen.
Yeah, I mean, you could make the call that it's the most action-packed and eventful J1 match day ever. And as I've just said, I think the Shonan win away at Kawasaki ranks at the top for me for the most shocking mid-season, at least, result in J1 history. You don't expect that on a random Wednesday in late May, do you? And I mean, yeah, Shonan have had better days. I mean, they won the Levain Cup a couple of years ago, and their supporters had a magical day out, and they wouldn't trade that for this win on Wednesday night, I know. But yeah, results are like this. I mean, there are occasional massive upsets in J1 that we know, and that's why it's the most unpredictable league in the world. But I mean, when Kawasaki play, things are usually very predictable indeed, aren't they? And for them to concede, as you said, four goals in 11 minutes to the team second from bottom it frankly beggared belief. And well, it piqued my interest and got me wondering if and when a defending J1 champion had ever lost by 4 clear goals the following season. Now, Sam, I'm not going to spring this on you as a quiz question because, of course, the J-League goes back to 1993 and neither of us were following the league back then. So I'm not expecting you to remember anything like that. But, I imagine that it hadn't happened before. But I had a bit of time on my hands at work on Thursday. So I went through and checked the game-by-game results of each J1 champion in the following season when they were the defending champion, and actually discovered this was the 6th time it has happened that a reigning champion has lost by 4 clear goals. The first time was all the way back in 1995 when Verdy Kawasaki lost 6-2 to Yokohama Marinos, and indeed it happened the next 2 seasons as well. F. Marinos got done by Kashiwa Reysol, and Reysol did it again in 1997 to Kashima, and up until Wednesday, Kashima were the only champion to suffer that fate at home. The final 2 times, slightly more recently, in 2005, when FC Tokyo beat Yokohama F. Marinos 4-0, and I might have even been at that game, but I certainly couldn't remember it. And in 2014, the last time it's happened, when Kashima smashed Hiroshima 5-1. But it's safe to say that none of those teams who have done that to a defending champion were as low as Shonan in the table when they did it, Sam. So for me, yeah, this takes the cake as the biggest shock in the history of the league.
Yeah, I think it has to, and you're right, I wouldn't have got any of those because the 2014 is the one year, the year before I started J1, so yeah, I'd have got nowhere near that. But I think that goes to show like how great the league has always been. It's always been unpredictable. You've always got not necessarily a massive gap between top and first, which makes this result even more shocking, I think, because of how dominant Kawasaki have been as champions and really how poor Shonan have looked for a long while. Actually, they've been flirting with relegation. So to have go from that extreme to lose 4-0 to the other extreme, yeah, it definitely puts this as, without doubt, in my opinion, the most extraordinary result and biggest shock that J1 has ever seen.
Indeed. But wait, there's more from last Wednesday, and Sam's mentioned it already. We had a team hit for 6 for the first time this season, Kashiwa thumping Sapporo 6-1 away. And as we'll come to when we discuss the weekend's results, Sapporo have taken another heavy beating in match day 16. But last Wednesday, Sam, it's fair to say that Misha Petrovic's decision to start your man Akito Fukumori in central midfield didn't go to plan.
No, not really. But, I mean, it's not a surprising move, is it, really? When you look at Misha Petrovic, he rarely wants to play actual defenders in defence, and he's not playing his defenders there anymore. It didn't work out. It was a rash challenge from Fukumori. He deserved the red card. And from then on, Sapporo, as they often do, just capitulated. There's no way Misha Petrovic was going to go damage limitation from that point. Every substitution he made was attacking, and yeah, they just got hit for 6, and they came out and said, yeah, but we played our football, so they didn't seem that fussed about it. But I don't know how long that goes on, because yeah, they were almost maybe even worse actually this weekend in their defending. I don't know if you saw my tweet that was a picture of Sapporo defending a free kick at 4-1 down, where they'd put 2 defenders marking 6 Kobe attackers. So yeah, that sums up where Sapporo are at the moment. And yeah, I never want to call for Misha Petrovic to leave because it is just so entertaining, but I imagine they might be getting slightly annoyed with the lack of any defensive responsibility at that club.
Yeah, they've really taken some hidings, haven't they? Of course, they were the first team to let in 5 goals in a game this season. That was to a Totosu earlier on. And yes, they've been the first team to be hit for 6. And unsurprisingly, I suppose, even though they are 11th in the table, they have the worst goal difference in the entire division at minus 11 after 16 games. And Reysol deserve their credit, I suppose, for taking advantage of the situation. Yeah, Fukumori's early red card left Sapporo playing with 10 men for, well, it was almost the entire game, wasn't it? And they ran riot, especially in the second half, scoring 4 in 17 minutes. The young striker Kaito Mori came off the bench on the hour, and 10 minutes later, he'd already bagged himself a brace. Well, elsewhere on Wednesday, we saw Urawa's run of seven straight draws end, but not the way they would have liked it. They lost a 2-0 away at Cerezo Osaka. Also, FC Tokyo actually played well, and Pigs flew as Ryoya Ogawa scored twice in a 3-0 away win at Shimizu. And Yokohama F. Marinos took advantage of the slip-up by Kashima and the capitulation by Kawasaki to close within 2 points of those two at the summit with a 2-0 home win over Kyoto. But as we'll come on to, both of those two, the top two slipped up again. And as we head into the international break, F. Marinos are actually back at the summit of J1. But we'll kick off our review of the weekend's match day 16 with another surprising defeat for Kawasaki. They were obviously desperate to bounce back after that hiding at the hands of Shonan on the Wednesday. Sam, they traveled to Kyoto, but again, it just didn't go for them. And Sanga took advantage of an own goal from Asahi Sasaki on the hour to claim for them a glorious 1-0 victory over the defending champions.
Yeah, huge result for them, because Kyoto had been on the back of a bit of shaky form. They had not really got the results that they'd been getting at the start of the season. So great for them that they managed to bounce back and get such a big victory against Kawasaki. To be honest, I think Kyoto played a lot better in other games this season and not got the rewards for it. They're delighted that things have gone their way a little bit here. For Kawasaki, it was a strange game. They weren't as bad as they were against Shonan, but generally they were quite plodding in the way they went forward. They were gifted a great chance early on when Shirai put a dreadful back pass into Damian, and last season I don't think there was any doubt that Damian would finish that, but the way things are going for Kawasaki in the last couple of games, and for him generally this season, not been as prolific, he didn't put that away. And they also missed another good chance right at the end, at the beginning of the second half. The ball through to Marcinho and he miskicked it, and that just kind of summed up where Kawasaki were as an attacking force. And defensively, they weren't awful. They were a lot worse against Shonan without Taniguchi. They were okay here, but yeah, the way that they concede their goal is just awful. I mean, Ogiwara gets through too easily down the left-hand side, and then the less said about that own goal, the better for young Sasaki.
Yeah, most definitely. In Kyoto, obviously they weren't bothered by what had happened to Frontale on Wednesday night, but I mean, they would have known they were facing a wounded animal, and they'd gone six without a win themselves. So as you say, yeah, after a run of patchy form to take on the defending champions on your own patch, the defending champions with a huge point to prove and a score to settle, and to hold them at bay. Emerge with a 1-0 victory. Their first win in seven is a huge credit to Chokwije and his side. And it steadies the ship most definitely for Sanga heading into the international break. So they'll enjoy their break. And they don't get much easier for them. They have to head up to Kashima in the first game back after this elongated international break. But as I said, they'll be able to enjoy a bit of a break with these 3 points in the bank. So, Frontale, Sam, they very rarely lose, and they very, very rarely lose two on the spin. So, as you say, they weren't as bad as they were for large patches on Wednesday night here against Sanga. But I don't know, are you noticing a lack of confidence here? I mean, yeah, as you say, Damiao would have gobbled up a couple of chances that he spurned at last season, no question. And Marcinho, unfortunate to miss the target with his chance when, he looked well-placed to score. So, I mean, we can only react to what we've seen in the last couple of games, and we know Kawasaki have a track record of righting any wrong that they tend to suffer through. But are you noticing a kind of a wider problem here for them?
Yeah, I think so. And as you say, this is the first time they've lost back-to-back games since 2018, which is an incredible record to go over 4 years. It has been since they lost back-to-back. They did have 2-0 losses to Reds and Tokyo back in early May of 2018. So, yeah, they've gone on such an incredible run. But this is kind of, you could argue that you'd seen the pattern coming for a while with Kawasaki, and I'm sure Frattali supporters would say they haven't played that well this season. They have been getting results, but it's not been the free-flowing Frattali that we were used to, because at their best when they had Tanaka and Mitoma, etc., they were just blowing teams away, and then they've slowly lost those players, and they then became that kind of well-oiled machine that just kind of could grind out victories. They could play in bursts and then just end games in like short periods of time, and that ability seems to have got less and less. They're still playing kind of within themselves and only kind of flicking the switch on every now and then, but now they don't always have the quality to make the most of those situations. And like this one would have been that case where they only flicked on for brief moments but didn't take their chances. They didn't have that quality. So yeah, I just think that maybe Onyeki has to go back to a more intense way of playing, a more like full throttle approach, so they have to create a lot more chances to get their goals, because at the moment I'm not sure they can always rely on creating that two or three good chances and definitely putting them away in a way that they managed to when you could just bring Mitoma on and at half time and within 10 minutes he'd scored twice and Frattali were away. So yeah, I think it might be a time for reflection for Onyeki. He has to look at what the players he now has available to him, and then maybe he has to just shift up his system a little bit to try and make the most of it. I mean, he still will point to a few injuries there. Jesiel should be back relatively soon. I think he's still going through his rehab, but shouldn't be too far away. Oshima was back in training, but I mean, what does that mean? He'd probably get himself injured before the next game. But then Chanatip again is not too far. So there is quality still to come back into this side, but yeah, I just think he might need to switch things up just to give that team, make that team create a lot more chances and be a lot more aggressive against teams, rather than this, we'll just kind of sit back, rope-a-dope type thing and then pick them off, because at the moment, they're not always able to do that.
Yeah, well, this is going to be a fascinating period of the season for Frattali, and how Toru Onyeki goes about steadying his ship, because as you said, they very rarely lose Frattali, and as you've just said, terrific stat that it's the first time in 4 years they've lost back-to-back league games. So we could say heaven help Sapporo in the first game back after the international break. I don't think Onyeki could handpick a better opponent for Frattali to face. So we'll see if they've got any of their key players back by that time, and how they fare against Consadole when we return to a league action. But it's the musical chairs up at the top of J1. So heading into last Wednesday, Frattali were top, but then getting smashed by Shonan and Kashima drawing meant that Antlers went back to the top of the pile. And the leaders headed to Ajinomoto Stadium to face FC Tokyo, who, as I mentioned earlier, were coming off a good performance away at Shimizu and a 3-0 away win that seemingly just came out of the blue. Tokyo hadn't been playing well, as you're probably sick of me saying, listeners, for quite a while now. But yes, they turned on an excellent performance at Nihon Daira on Wednesday, and they followed that up with a huge victory for Tokyo, and a landmark win for Albert Pucci coming against the then J1 leaders. Tokyo running out 3-1 winners over Antlers. Ryoma Watanabe was given the nod to start, and he justified Albert's faith in him by scoring twice in 9 minutes towards the end of the first half, both goals set up by Diego Oliveira, who then made it 3-0 from the penalty spot 7 minutes into the second half after Bueno fouled Dialton. Bueno didn't have a terrific day, but did he, Sam, in his return to the starting lineup? And Dialton in particular gave him a very torrid time. But as we knew from last Wednesday night, 3-0, you're never safe against Kashima. And indeed, just 80 seconds after they went 3-0 down, ISA Wada swept home past a Jakub Slovic to make it 3-1. And Tokyo supporters as a collective probably had their hearts in their mouths at the prospect of antlers roaring back into this game, Sam. But apart from, well, some decent chances for Ryuji Izumi and Arthur Kaike, it just didn't really happen for Kashima in the last half hour of the game. And much to my amusement, Tokyo were able to keep the ball in the corner for about 5 or 6 minutes towards the end of stoppage time, which was, entertaining to watch, but I'm sure very frustrating for Antlers supporters. But, all in all, again, two wins that I didn't necessarily see coming, but it's been a very good week for FC Tokyo.
Yeah, very good week. And I was going to ask you how it felt when Kashima pulled one back, but then I remembered I accidentally spoiled the result for you. So apologies again for that. But at that point, I thought, OK, we're on for another Wednesday night here in Kashima. We're going to come all guns blazing. But Tokyo, to their absolute credit, kept them at bay for large periods of that final half an hour or so. And as you say, they're having a bit of fun with it at the end. I thought Tokyo played very well, even though I thought Kashima were quite accommodating in the way that they allowed so much space in between their midfield and defence. I thought the back line was really awful. Bueno was... honestly, it was one of the worst performances you'll see. I doubt and saw him, his eyes lit up, and just had like the run of him all game, and poor Bueno just couldn't get to grips with him. The penalty was just the most obvious thing that was ever going to happen in that game when he brought him down. And Tokyo just used that really well. So the quick through passes just kind of caught Kashima off guard. Matsuki, the main instrument from those, playing the balls through to mainly Adalton. But then Diego, who's looked off the pace, I thought, most of this season. I thought he played a lot better, more so in his hold-up play than necessarily his goal scoring. But yeah, he did well. And Watanabe, I mean, took his chance very nicely for the two goals. So all in all, a very good performance. And I mean, you'll know better than me, but I can't imagine Tokyo's record against Kashima is very good. It just sounds like a game that Tokyo usually struggle in. So to come through so convincingly, I think that's great. And it's been a very good couple of days for FC Tokyo.
Yeah, most definitely. The Shimizu game, there was really only five or 10 minute stretch midway through the first half where I felt slightly worried about how that game was going, as long as it stayed 0-0. But, Thiago Santana was really only the only avenue to goal for Espol. So, I mean, he did hit the post, so he was very threatening. But ultimately, that was a comfortable win. And then to, I think we both said it, to look the part against the then leaders. And, you're right, Tokyo don't tend to do well against Antlers. It's just one of those. I don't think you can even call it a bogey team. I think Tokyo just have an inferiority complex against the inverted commas bigger clubs like Kashima and Urawa, even though obviously Tokyo should be the biggest of the big clubs coming from the biggest city. But as we all know, it doesn't work like that. And a very suburban, inward way of thinking that Tokyo have. They're very often the small fish. And so to stand up against an Antlers side who have, coming off that epic game on Wednesday night, but obviously with the attacking options they have at their disposal, and to, for the most part, keep them fairly well holstered was, very, very pleasing to see. And with the, the leaders coming back to the pack somewhat, it's, the last time I was feeling good about FC Tokyo, obviously, Sam, I think they win 1 out of 7. So obviously you're not going to get carried away here, but two wins in 4 days and good value for both of them, I think. But the musical chairs continued at the top of the pile, as we've mentioned. So Yokohama F. Marinos returned to the top of J1 with a 2-0 away win over Iwata. Overall, Sam, I think we have to, we might have put the kiss of death on the top three, but I think the rest of the league have to thank us for that because, we were suggesting a couple of weeks ago that it looked like the top three were going to break away and we couldn't see any realistic challenges to them. Well, obviously, since then, Frontale have just suffered two very disappointing losses after drawing the game before that, and then Antlers have it 1-3 themselves. So they've all come back to the pack, and overall I think we deserve a pat on the back.
Absolutely. Just doing our public duty to get this into a really exciting league again. Now we've got 8 teams there running for the title, so that's great. It's just amazing, really, considering they looked really comfortable 2 weeks ago, but that is just the nature of this league. Anything can happen, and we've just ruined the seasons of Kashima and Kawasaki. I think Yokohama got off fairly lightly with only the one defeat, but you can all thank us later. We'll have the checks in the post, please, from every other club.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, yeah, we obviously don't need to do much to pump up this league. It's always, unpredictable and thrilling to watch. But, yeah, if we can get a couple more teams interested in, at least a top three spot, then, that's got to be good for us all, of course. So, if Marino's winning 2-0 away at the Yamaha Stadium after a goalless first half, I guess you could say it was a Frontale-esque burst of 2 goals in 8 minutes that ultimately won this for F. Marinos, Sam. It was a Teruhito Nakagawa who gave F. Marinos the lead 10 minutes into the second half, blasting home from close range after Ken Matsubara sent in a cross from deep on the right. And then 8 minutes later, Nakagawa himself crossed from the left and Leo Ciara rose in the center to head past Miura. I guess Iwata... they are the masters of the late comeback this season. So the fact that they didn't have a shot on goal until the 75th minute, they might have just been playing rope-a-dope, Sam, because they did then threaten Yohei Takaoka's goal a couple of times after that, and indeed had what looked to me from the highlights, a decent shout for a penalty when Fabian Gonzalez surged through the center, but the referee and indeed VAR thought otherwise. So, I guess your overall thoughts on this game and whether you thought Iwata had a penalty shout there right at the death.
For start with the penalty, I thought it was a penalty. I thought there was contact on Gonzalez as he went down. He was absolutely furious. But, nothing was given there. And I think there was a shout, actually, in fairness, for Marinos up the other end. But that wasn't looked at either. I don't think they even considered it. They just went for a goal kick. So I just concluded that VAR had gone home early from this game and had somewhere to go. Because I was surprised that at least one of them wasn't given. But, Jubilee will feel... slightly hard done to, but they didn't really turn up until the 75th minute or so. Maybe it's just what they do, because they do just kind of go for it at the end. They try and keep themselves into games, and they had some good chances. Takeoka had to be at his best for a few of those chances. Gonzalez himself actually probably had the best one, which was a really well saved low down by Takeoka. But otherwise, Marinos were the better side without ever being too convincing for large parts of it. Leo Ciara was obviously starting up front with Anderson Lopez still suspended. And, I'm not sure he's quite clinical enough to play that role for any length of time. And Nakagawa certainly isn't. I mean, they might have missed chances he's done in the last few games. But eventually, they just got through by sheer numbers of chances and sheer numbers. The pressing, I thought, was generally the best part about F. Marinos. They gave Jubilee no time on the ball. They were unable to really get going and get up the pitch. So Marinos always had that territorial advantage, and that finally paid eventually in that burst towards the start of the second half. They put in a couple of decent crosses in, and Jubilee just kind of got caught out of position for that first one. And Yamamoto it is who has 2 players to mark. He has to rush to the near post. It leaves Nakagawa free, and Nakagawa took his chance there. And then Leo Ciara was pretty poorly marked as well for the second cross. So Marinos just plodded away and eventually got their rewards, and they did deserve that victory. But Jubilee, they still hang into games. They're not gonna go quietly, so credit to them, I suppose. But I think they need to do more for the rest of the game than just a 15 minute burst at the end.
Indeed. All right. So at the top of the J1 table, then at the international break after match day 16, we have Yokohama F. Marinos on 31 points, Kashima and Kawasaki both on 30. And slightly unfamiliar territory for Frontale, obviously in third spot in the table, but also the fact that, by this stage of the season, Sam, their goal difference is usually better than the second place team goals for column. So the fact that they're only +3 after 16 games is an interesting little quirk. And I guess, an indication that this season is certainly not going as well as a Toru Oniki and his side would have hoped for. But Sam, just as a brief aside, we've mentioned that the VAR machine wasn't turned on at the Yamaha Stadium. Obviously, VAR was front and centre in a number of games last weekend. Obviously, Iwata had a bit of an axe to grind there, we think, for a possible penalty against Fabio Gonzalez. But then again, F. Marinos might have gotten one themselves. It did appear that the referee at the FC Tokyo Kashima game missed Yuma Suzuki throwing a pet bottle to the floor. So VAR very helpfully pointed that out to him, and that saw Suzuki booked in second half stoppage time. So I don't know what it is, but there's something about Kashima players and pet bottles this season.
Yeah, at least this wasn't booted into the crowd and causing everyone to die for cover. He's just taking this for straight out on the bottle and the ground. So, and yellow card was absolutely fine. I don't think it was anything more than that. I think players are allowed to show their frustration to a degree as long as they're not doing it against an opponent or anything like that. I think, I think in other leagues he'd probably got away with nothing there. But yeah, yellow card is probably just about right, and I'm sure that would have been to the delight of many onlookers at poor Yuma Suzuki.
Yes, certainly not everybody's cup of tea, but you can't question his passion. And that unfortunate pet bottle took a bit of a pounding, but it'll be okay, I'm sure. So F. Marino's top of the pile. We mentioned it was a great week for FC Tokyo. Well, what about for Kashiwa Reysol, Sam? As we mentioned, 6-1 away winners up at Sapporo on Wednesday night, and they followed that up with a 3-1 home win over Shimizu. And Reysol's a spectacular start to the season that has had a couple of blips here and there, but it's seen them enter the international break sitting proud up in fourth in the table after two straight wins heading into it. And they did it in some style, and Mateus Savio fired them into a sensational lead in the 13th minute, shifting the ball this way and that inside the D before sending a sublime left-footed strike into Shuichi Gonda's top right corner. Then in the 23rd minute, Reysol defender Takumi Kamijima headed a corner against the post, but they didn't have to wait too much longer to go 2-0 up. 6 minutes before half-time, Kamijima's fellow centre-half Taiyo Koga played a perfectly weighted through ball to Mao Hosoya, who took two touches at pace before slipping a neat finish beyond Gonda and inside the far post. Hosoya should have made it 3, but screwed his shot across goal in the 53rd minute. But 5 minutes later, Takuma Ominami swept in the clincher after Kamijima headed a deep cross into the mixer, and Hosoya's cushioned layoff found Ominami, who did the rest. S-Pulse sub Eichi Katayama lashed in a consolation in the 64th minute. And, things might have gotten a bit hairy for the hosts, but Masato Sasaki stood strong to deny Katayama's fellow subs, Osei Hun and Yusuke Goto, late on. We've been saying it all season, Sam. Reysol have been defying expectations, but what a way, and two spectacular results to go into the international break on the back of.
Yeah, absolutely perfect for them. I think they can send a lot of thanks to Sapporo, who definitely allowed their confidence to be boosted in midweek as they just had a procession. But fair play to them in that game, because they weren't just going to accept a 2-0 or a 3-0 victory. They absolutely went for it and got the goals they could have scored, 7 or 8, probably maybe even more than that in that midweek game. So they just kept going and had such confidence, and they started this game so quickly as well. Scored very early, another wonderful goal from Savio, and then they just kept going. I mean, maybe you could argue that Shimizu again were quite accommodating. They're not in very good form. I'm sure we'll speak afterwards. Hiroyoka has left by 1 minute, either fired or resigned or a combination of both. But yeah, they've not really been in great form. But Kashiwa took full advantage. As the cliche goes, you can only beat what's in front of them. They absolutely did that. They were clinical, they were ruthless. I think they were just really good, and they've got back into that form that they showed towards the start of the season. And because there was that slight worry that maybe they were just regressing, maybe towards more of a mid-table position, but they've bounced back very nicely. And Mao Hosoya, I tell you, I mean, Once Douglas got injured, I feared for Kashua because I didn't think there were too many like game-changing players there. But Hosoya, he's still only 20, but the composure he was showing in some of his finishes in this game in midweek as well, I think, they look like they've got a really good player on their hands there.
Yeah, most definitely. He's been absolutely terrific in recent weeks. And as you say, carrying a lot of the scoring load with Douglas out of the picture. Obviously, Matteo Savio is off to a fantastic start this season himself. But Hosoya, one for the future. Well, he's one for right now for Reysol, and he's doing a terrific job leading the line. And Reysol, absolutely brilliant. Once again, I mean, we mentioned it throughout the season so far. Almost everybody had them down towards the bottom of their J-Preds, but fourth, well and truly on merit, and fantastic for them. But as you mentioned, Sam, it's pretty grim for Shimizu at the moment, with Vissel finally picking up a couple of victories. The S-Pulse are now just 2 points from the cellar. And 2 points from, safety in the, they're currently in the promotion relegation playoff spot. And, five without a win. And that was enough for the S-Pulse front office. Again, whichever way you want to slice it, Hiraoka is no longer the man in charge. Whether he was sacked or fell on his sword, it doesn't really matter, does it? As results have not been good enough. And, You're officially off the bandwagon, but you're well and truly on record as saying that there is enough quality in this team. It's just a matter of the right man being put in charge and actually trying to steer them into the right direction.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, since I got off the bandwagon, the wheels have fallen off, so maybe I should have stayed on. It was keeping them going. But yeah, there's so much, well, not so much quality, but there is quality in this side. When Thiago Santana is a very good striker, and I like Jose Hun. I think he should probably play a little bit more. And then Matsuoka's a good midfielder. Shirasaki's a good midfielder. Suzuki has always been a decent defender. You've got the national team goalkeeper in there. For good or bad, I don't know what, there are real players in that team. And I think prior to these last two kind of capitulations, they've always been in games, but it's just not quite gone for them. So, yeah, I think if the right guy comes in and just harnesses the potential of this team, then they'll definitely be in a fight to stay out. I mean, it's a bit difficult when you're looking at that bottom of the table and you've still got Vissel Kobe and Urawa and Gamba there. And you think, OK, are they definitely teams that Shimizu can get above? But I still think there is quality there. We'll see what they do with them in terms of the new manager. Yoshiyuki Shinoda has come in kind of as a caretaker manager. They've said tentatively in charge is the translation I've got here. So I think he'll see them through the Emperor's Cup, and they might have a more permanent manager in place before they restart the league. So yeah, they've got to get that decision right. But yeah, I do think compared to, let's say, Jubilo and let's say Shonan, who are their nearest competitors, I think there's a lot more quality in this Shimizu S-Pulse team. So I don't think it's all doom and gloom for S-Pulse, but yeah, they've got to get this decision right.
Yeah, most definitely. It's a huge one. And you wonder how wide they'll be casting their net. We'll wait and see if any, the names of any candidates get leaked, and if not, then who they plump for will be very interesting. And obviously, whoever that is, they'll have to get straight to work, as we said, things are pretty grim at Nihon Daira at the moment. All right, well, Shonan's magical run of two straight victories had to come to an end sometime, and unfortunately for them, the hangover from last Wednesday night's stunning win over Frontale, as we both described it, the most shocking result in J1 history. Well, Shonan just returned to previous form, I suppose, losing a 2-0 at home to Cerezo Osaka, although that's probably not doing the hosts justice, is it, Sam? I mean, they did have a number of chances in this game, and indeed Shuto Machino, who's been in quite a purple patch recently, had a couple of efforts hit the woodwork in the first half. He shot across Kim Jin-hyun, but his effort came back off the post, and indeed Kim tipped his free kick onto the bar just before half time. But by that point in the game, Shonan were already behind after Adam Taggart opened the scoring for Cerezo in the 17th minute. And yes, the game was only sealed in bizarre circumstances in second half stoppage time with an incident that the Shonan keeper, Corsay Tani, would dearly love to have back, I'm sure, Sam.
Yeah, he's had, by his standards, a very poor season, I have to say. And his kicking is one of the main issues with that. I think we saw during the Olympics, I think that was a key area of weakness in his game, was his distribution. And then in this game, the last one where he concedes the second goal was not the first time that one of his clearances had caused his team real trouble. I think it was for the goal, actually, the first goal, where it's not a very good clearance and they managed to get it out to Maikuma. The defence is unsettled because they weren't expecting to be right on the defence again. And yeah, Taggart was in space to score. And then for the rest of that game, I thought Shonan were probably the better side at 1-0 down, just didn't take their chances. And then, yeah, it's a sucker punch for them to have their goalkeeper again clear poorly. He was off balance as he cleared it, and he went straight to Kato, who has as easy a goal as you'll have from 25 yards. So, yeah, I mean, he's been dropped from the national team for these upcoming friendlies, and yeah, it's just, you can see why. It's not been the greatest period for Corsay Tani. He's obviously got the talent to improve that and get better, but yeah, it's a shaky period for him, and perhaps the first time he's come under a little bit of scrutiny, I think, Corsay Tani. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see how he bounces back, but I'm sure he will. But yeah, it cost his team in this game, who otherwise played fairly well, although again, they perhaps used up all their goals in midweek because, yeah, they didn't take their chances here.
Yeah, most definitely. And in contrast, yes, Cerezo did. It was a really good downward header from Taggart, wasn't it? And then, yeah, the sealer, as we said, in second half stoppage time. Well, I guess it's in a fashion created by the substitute Hikaru Nakahara, who surges down the right. Tani charges out of his box. Right out to near the touchline to first pick up possession. But then as Nakahara continues to close him down, he just lumps it up the pitch. But as Sam said, straight to Nakahara's fellow sub, Mutsuki Kato, who basically passed the ball into the unguarded net from 30 yards. And that was that. So, yeah, Shonan still second from bottom, although, probably, as I said, a little bit harsh on them there by saying they just returned to previous form, as they did have chances here, but unfortunately were not able to take them. But as for Cerezo, Sam, I think we've been quite positive about them in recent weeks, and it's 4 wins in 5. It's 3 on the spin as they head in to the international break, having worked their way up to 5th in the table. And I mean, at the time of the Osaka derby, as we mentioned, Cerezo and Gamba were next to each other in the table, and now obviously a number of positions separate them after Cerezo have hit a purple patch here, and they're looking terrific.
Yeah, I thought that was a big game when it happened, obviously, besides it just being an Osaka derby. And they've gone from strength to strength after winning that game, and from being kind of mid-table mediocrity, it could have gone one of two ways. And Gamba of the team that have dropped, not quite to relegation, but they've dropped a little further, and now Cerezo find themselves as firm ACL contenders. They've just not in this game necessarily, but generally speaking, I think they've played very well. They've got a good solid defence now with Matej Jonic there. Adam Taggart coming in gives them a good focal point up front, a little bit of a target to aim at. They've got very good players in behind. Kiyotake is always good. I think Maikuma's emergence on that right hand side gives a very good outlet. And Jean Patrick has taken over from Takashi Inoue on that left hand side and has played quite well. Not quite to the same level, I don't think, but they've got away without Inoue there. It seems over the weekend that reports have come out that kind of the relationship is kind of unretrievable at the moment. He's not returned to training yet. He's kind of refusing to, by the sounds of it. And yeah, I think they're looking to kind of get rid of him, but they haven't let that bother them. They've managed to keep going with that going on in the background. So yeah, a lot of credit has to go to Cerezo. They look like a really good outfit, and yeah, they'll be contending at least for large parts of this season. Whether they've got enough for a Champions League burst, it remains to be seen. But yeah, they've put themselves in a nice position at the almost halfway stage.
Yeah, most definitely. So, yeah, we mentioned Cerezo, their city rivals, Gumba. We'll come on to them shortly. But, yeah, before we do, another team that's heading into the international break on a good run of form is Sanfrecce Hiroshima. In one of only two games played on Saturday, Sanfrecce hosted Nagoya. And, yeah, the hosts were back in action after their Wednesday night fixture away at Gumba. Osaka had to be postponed due to a COVID situation at Hiroshima. For visiting Nagoya in this game, they suffered an early blow when their keeper Mitch Langerak limped off and was replaced by Yohei Takeda in just the ninth minute. And, Takeda was fortunate not to concede in the 23rd minute, but Nassim Ben Khalifa hit the post after Tomoya Fuji surged down the right and drove in a ball that Khalifa steered towards goal. He then nodded the rebounder straight at Takeda, who managed to gather at the second attempt. But yes, the breakthrough did come for the hosts 13 minutes into the second half. Leo Silva fouled Makoto Mitsuta just outside the box, and Gakuto Notsuda curled the resulting free kick over the wall and well inside the wrong-footed Takeda's near post for his first Sanfrecce goal in 7 years. And, I think it's fair to say, Takeda wasn't cold by that point of the game, Sam, but I don't think Langerak would have been beaten at his near post in a situation like that from Notsuda's free kick. So, an unfortunate one for Grampus to concede. I mean, they almost equalized late on, but the mercurial Mateus curled a first-time shot from 25 yards wide. Overall, I think from what I saw from the highlights, Hiroshima controlled enough of the game here to say that they deserved the 3 points and indeed to head in to the international break sitting seventh in the table.
Yeah, I thought they were thoroughly deserving of the victory. I think 1-0 didn't do them justice. I think they were in control for large parts of this game. And Nagoya, as I've said, for most of the season, are relying on Mateus. And Mateus was shackled very well throughout the entirety of the game. He had a couple of speculative efforts. And knowing Mateus, one of those could have gone in. And it was a decent effort, a late one. But yeah, generally speaking, he didn't have a great deal of joy or much room to manoeuvre into. And Hiroshima were very much on top. They missed a couple of chances, but they did get their goal. And I think the J-League decided this was the greatest free kick in the history of the world or something, the way they were describing it. But it's poor goalkeeping. As you say, if Langerak was there, I think he sidesteps across and catches it because it's that far inside the post. But yeah. Takeda, he takes one step round and then he bends round to look round the wall. And by the time he does that, he has to scramble back and he's nowhere near it. But it's not far from the centre of the goal compared to the corner. So, yeah, I'm glad for Notsuda. Obviously, he's had a tough time of it, really. Never being able to quite break into this Hiroshima side. He's tried on a couple of occasions. He's had to go out on various loans. But he's finally settled in. He's taken the place of Aoyama in there and obviously stalwart of Hiroshima. But he's played very well, so I'm glad for him that he's got his reward. And yeah, it wasn't quite the best performance that Hiroshima put in this season, but they still just nullified Nagoya with their pressing. They didn't allow Nagoya to build up anything, and yeah, eventually they've got their goal. And maybe it probably should have been more, but yeah, they're up into seventh. They've got that game in hand, which could potentially take them into fourth. And they're another team that just on the bubble at the moment, looking very good. I mean, I've said it pretty much every week, but he's done a fantastic job, hasn't he, Michael Skibber?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something we didn't really see coming, as we've mentioned numerous times, and you're probably sick of me mentioning it by now, listeners. But yeah, all the way back in, what was it, Match Day 6 or something, when they played the Battle of the Bottom at Shonan, and ever since then, that win has really propelled them up the table. But what has really done that is, as you say, Sam, Michael Skibber getting his hands properly onto this squad and getting them to play in a way that he wants them to. And as you've said yourself a number of times, a Hiroshima team that's actually fun to watch is a rarity in recent seasons. So long may it continue. And well done, as you said, to Notsuda for that that goal. As poor as the goalkeeping was, he's still got to get it over the wall in the first place. And well done to the veteran. As for Gunba Osaka, well, they were looking forward to some home comforts last Wednesday, but as we mentioned, their game had to be postponed due to COVID problems at Hiroshima. So that meant they played their third straight game away from home on Sunday, away at Tosu. And a couple of results had gone nicely for Gunba in recent weeks, of course, but this one didn't, and there was a sting in the tail, much like in the Osaka Derby back on the 21st of May, when a late goal from the Tosu defender Hwang Sok-ho won it for the hosts. That came in the 88th minute. Earlier on, way back in the 19th minute, Yuki Horigome had swept in from 6 yards after Nanase Ino drove a low ball across the box. That was Tosu 1-0 up. Then in the 58th minute, the exciting Gunba youngster Hiroto Yamami rose at the back post to head in Mitsuki Saito's cross from the right. But the sting in the tail was Hwang's header from a Kentaro Moriya free kick. And there's two sides to every story. Of course, Sam, disappointing for Gunba to lose the game so late, but this this young Tosu side just continues to defy expectations on a similar level to Kashua Reysol, I suppose. And they find themselves sitting pretty in eighth, heading into the international break, and their season just continues to flourish.
It does. They kept going. They showed that battling quality in midweek, just to come back from, they must have been shell-shocked at 4-3, but they still managed to get back to 4-4. And then in this one, it looked like Gunba in the ascendancy when Yamami equalised. But it was Tosu that kept going until the end, took advantage of some slack marking to get the free kick, to get the header in from Hwang Sok-ho. But fair play to Tosu. They again played their football very nicely. I thought the build-up for the first goal was very good, with Miyashiro, Ino, Horigome all involved. And they looked just about the better side. It wasn't massive amounts between the two sides, but I thought Tosu played well. For Gunba, and I'd like to get this scoop from Johnny Nicol, actually, because obviously last week Gen Shoji and Leandro Pereira got into that little bit of an argument, and there was no Gen Shoji in the matchday squad this week. So that was very interesting to note. I don't know, maybe it's just an injury, but I'd be interested to see what has gone on there, because obviously Shoji was the instigator for the kind of arguments that were going on. So who knows what's gone on behind the scenes there, but it's almost like off the field incidents are more interesting at Gunba at the moment than necessarily the football that they're playing on the pitch. So that they've still got a few injuries, but a lot of players were back for this game, and they still don't seem to be clicking really as an attacking unit. Yamami did get another goal, which is good for him. He maybe is going on a bit of a run now, but otherwise it's still not quite working together. Who knows how much they've been able to play with the COVID players coming back from their illness and coming back into training. It's all been a little bit disrupted at Gunba, but maybe they just need this break and can really get to grips with it, because we haven't really spoken about them too much in terms of a relegation battle, but they're only 4 points off the drop, and they're kind of continually sliding into that. And you think there's Reds behind, there's Kobe behind. Maybe they are in a little bit of trouble and do need a bit of a kick up the backside.
I was kind of, I didn't want to get too doom and gloom, but I was kind of thinking that, they're in danger of having another lost season, really, aren't they? After obviously last season just never got going with you missing those six games right back at the start of the season, and then having to play catch up all summer. I don't suppose I'd entertain the thought of them slipping all the way down into a relegation dogfight, but they're not a massive amount of points clear of the drop zone, even though as you said earlier, they do have a game in hand. But we'll have to get the lowdown from Johnny, not only on the Shoji and Pereira situation, but just on his thoughts over the general state of Gunba at the moment. It's slightly concerning times. They're obviously in this game until very late on, but weren't able to come away with anything. And yeah, as for Tosu, well, as we said, yeah, they continue to ride high. And yeah, fair dues on that for them. And yeah, well, they'll obviously look to kick on once we restart in the middle of June. All right, well, yeah, I guess Kobe and their supporters were hoping that wins like their 4-1 victory over Sapporo on Sunday would have been a regulation occurrence this season, but it certainly has not been. But they finally notched their second win of the season by cruising past Sapporo, who, as we said earlier, were on the end of another battering here. It was Tetsushi Yamakawa who lashed in first time from 25 yards to give them the lead in the 19th minute, though Sapporo did equalise just before the hour when Douglas Oliveira fired in off the post after Daya Maikawa dropped Daiki Suga's cross. But then a bit of a burst from Kobe. Firstly, Yoshinori Muto's bullet header from Koya Yuruki's free kick from the right in the 64th minute put them back in front. Then Ryuho Kikuchi made it 3-1 5 minutes later when he blasted in from inside the 6-yard box. Then Kazuki Fukai scored an own goal for Kobe to make it 4-1 when Yuruki's cross, which was intended for Yuya Osako, went in off Fukai's leg. And straight from the kickoff after going 4-1 down, things went from bad to worse for Sapporo. Gabriel Xavier's heavy touch was pounced on by Osako, and Xavier brought him down and was shown a straight red card. So we, Sapporo played the last 14 minutes with 10 men. And obviously, yeah, there was no way back into the game for them at that point. So an interesting one here for Kobe. Sam, obviously any victory is precious for them at the moment and where they sit in the table. I mean, they're guaranteed to be in the bottom three at the halfway point of the season. And yes, they're still bottom of the table. But they can head into the international break now, having taken 4 points from their last two games. And a victory like this, if anything can give them confidence from what they've done so far this season, then surely this is it.
It should do, but they beat Tosu a few weeks back 4-0, and that kind of proved to be a bit of a false dawn. So we'll wait and see. I mean, large parts of this game, like, they scored early, but it was fairly early. But Yamakawa's strike is a speculative effort from the edge of the area. It's not like they've created a great chance and really torn Sapporo apart. So they were ahead 1-0, then they fell apart a little bit. Dreadful goalkeeping. I mean, if they're looking anywhere in the summer, it has to be for a goalkeeper, because unfortunately Maikawa is not up to it, and they really need a solid presence back there, because especially with the defence not as watertight as it maybe was last season. And then so they were 1-1, then they do score again with an unmarked Muto gets a header. So again, it's maybe more down to Sapporo than necessarily Vissla at that point. But from then on, once they got 2-1 up, you've got to give them a lot of credit, because they played a lot better. They were a lot quicker, they were moving down the wings, they were bursting through the lines. Maybe Sapporo, with their defence and lack of defence, helped them in this, but it was a lot more like the Kobe of last season. They were more direct. They got Muto and Osako playing together. The interplay was very good. Yuruki, I thought, had a fantastic last period of this game down that left-hand side. So it was a much better display at that point. So hopefully for Kobe's sake, they can take that on. But, I mean, just in the back of my mind, I have, this is Sapporo, and just, what were they doing throughout the entirety of this game? I mentioned the free kick they were defending earlier, 2 versus 6. And just looking at that red card, Gabriel Xavier, the famous attacking midfielder, receives the ball from kickoff, and then he has a heavy touch. But why is there nobody behind him? How is it possible that he is the last man in that position? And just, where have they gone from kickoff? And just, they are so dreadfully organised back there. And yeah, it's great that you want to go and attack, but just please, Misha, just have a little bit of sensibility in this, because he's going to get himself sacked and I don't want him to go anywhere. But you've got to adapt just a little bit. Don't take away all the attacking flair, and I love everything about it. But yeah, this, it's just ridiculous at times. That 2 versus 6 was just How can that possibly ever be allowed? When, I mean, it's just, someone look at it. You can't, that can't be right. And I mean, they've just, they allowed Kashua to walk over them in midweek. They've allowed Kobe to do the same in this second half. I mean, heads need to be clanked together at Sapporo, because that just can't continue.
Yeah, yeah, we don't want Misha going anywhere, but yes, come on, mate, you've got to sort yourself out and some semblance of a defence organised, because if it carries on like this, then I think the board will have no choice. But they're pretty crook. I mean, as we said, I mean, they're not in a bad position in the league at all. They're 11th, but I mean, these last two results, coupled with their 5-0 battering they took against Tosu earlier on in the season. I mean, that should have been a warning in and of itself. But I guess it was enough time ago that any lessons they learned from that hammering have well and truly worn off, and maybe they need to be battered into shape over the course of the international break, because they need to. They need to right some wrongs, I think, in on the training ground, and let's see how they go. As we said, they return to action with an away trip to Kawasaki. So goodness knows how that game will go. But Kobe, I agree on Maekawa and Ikura and the need for a new keeper. I wonder if they might look local for a replacement, Sam, because the previous game we talked about, for Gamba, I mean, Taichi Kato started in goal for Gamba, and he's the third backup keeper to Masaaki Higashiguchi, who has started so far this season. And of course, they've also got Kosei Tani on loan at Shonan on their books, Sam. So I wonder if any of those Higashiguchi backups, or indeed Tani, might be names that Kobe might consider for a new man between the sticks, or whether they might look internationally for a new stopper. But they've got to do something. Presuming they stay in J1, of course, they're going to have to do something to strengthen that position between the sticks, aren't they?
I don't think any of those players have ever played for Barcelona or ever been to Barcelona, so I'm not sure they're going to be picking up the Gamba reserve goalkeeper. I think they'll probably look afar. Like, if I was to pick the ideal one, I'd say look at Kosuke Nakamura at Porto Venense. He's been there, he's not really got too much game time, but I mean, we've all loved him previously, and I think that's a solid enough goalkeeper, probably one that's available. They will probably go, I don't know, Victor Valdez or something, if they're looking at their usual routes for players. But I'd say Nakamura would probably be the one I would look at as the easiest one to get a hold of. But who knows with Kobe's strategy of Barcification.
Most definitely. And, I don't know how we've managed this, Sam, but the hour mark has just ticked by. And here we are approaching our final game of match day 16, having also talked extensively about Wednesday's round. So, we'll finish things off with the only... Now, I have to make sure I get this right, because I messed this up last week, didn't I? I believe the only draw of the match day. Yes, I'm triple checking, and that is correct. On Saturday, Fukuoka hosted Urawa, and Avispa took a little bit of a battering here, at least in the stats. The shots were 13-3 in favor of Reds, who had over 70% possession, but as is their wont recently, they were unable to break through and unable to win a game that was there for the taking. Sam, it's now winless in 9 Reds, with 8 of them draws. Of course, the loss to Cerezo on Wednesday night. And in the cold light of day, after 16 games, Reds have just 2 wins all season, the same amount as Shimizu and Kobe, who we've spoken about as being in a massive amount of trouble. And Reds themselves are in the bottom 6 at the international break in 14th, and things aren't good enough. We've just seen Shimizu relieve Hiroaki Hiraoka of his duties. I don't think we can see a similar thing happening at Urawa, where Ricardo Rodriguez is obviously just in his second season, having won the Emperor's Cup at the end of his first. So last season, I think we all agree that, Reds were slightly ahead of schedule with their sixth place league finish and the cup getting them back into the ACL. But this year, things just aren't going for them at all. And, they are where they are.
Yeah, quite frankly, it's not good enough. And, the Reds should be much higher in the table. The players that they have, they've just got so many options. They shouldn't be nine games without a win. You mentioned potential for a firing or whatnot. I didn't expect it, but I did look this morning, woke up and scrolled through Twitter, just having an eye on things. Maybe something would have happened with the international break coming up. But no, Rodriguez is still there. And I think that's the right decision. I think they still have to go with him. I still think they just need to click and then it should happen for them. And I think with the quality in there, they should be winning games. And I'm sure eventually it will happen. But yeah, again, this was a game where they dominated the game. Avispa, I thought, were quite poor, to be honest, but they can just sit back and they got lucky in this game a few times with the ball striking the post from Akimoto. And then there was one where Ito went round the goalkeeper and hit the post. I think he was flagged offside, but if he'd scored, I'm pretty confident, even with my knowledge of the VIR lines, that this would have been given as a goal. I think he was onside. So, yeah, there were a few let-offs for Avispa, but generally Reds got into decent positions and then didn't have that clinical edge. I mean, there was no Juncker, no Moberg. Isaka was on the bench for the second time this week for reasons unknown. And, they just didn't quite look like they were going to score. Akimoto was playing up front, and I mean, we've sung his praises for the last year or two, but mainly as a left winger, where that's where he causes the most problems. I don't necessarily see him as an out and out striker, and they'd moved Schalk out to the left wing, and I just think that just doesn't make sense. I'd swap them over, and I think you'd get better out of them. But again, I'm not a football manager, I'm not seeing these players on a day to day basis, but it just looks a little bit odd to me. But yeah, they were getting in reasonable positions. They had a lot of the territory, a lot of the possession, but yeah, they didn't get anywhere. Murakami had a reasonable day in goal. I think Akimoto's one that hit the post was probably a good save, actually, for Murakami. And yeah, Avispa are a difficult nut to break down, although I think compared to their performance against Yokohama, I think they might have a right to be a little bit disappointed of Avispa in the way that they played, because there wasn't this engagement higher up the field in this game. They didn't try and come out and maybe put more pressure on Reds. They just sat deep and just allowed them to have the ball. Maybe there was a little bit less of a worry that they had from the Reds attackers. They didn't expect them to be able to pick through them in the way that they expected Yokohama to maybe do that. So they just sat in, but they just accepted the draw, which I think was a little bit disappointing. I think, yeah, if they could have gone for this, Reds have had problems at the back. I think they could have got something from the game. But as it was, they didn't really go for it. And Reds just didn't have the quality to break them down.
Yeah, ultimately, I guess a frustrating result for both teams then. Yeah, Fukuoka at kickoff obviously would have hoped to do a lot better in front of their home supporters. And Reds are just desperate for any kind of a victory. And luck wasn't with them. As you said, that really early chance for Akimoto deflected onto the post. And then, it was unfortunately, for everybody involved, just one of those days. And 0-0 was the final result. Just for the record, I completely agree with you, Sam. I don't want to see Rodriguez sacked over the course of this international break. But, we know that some clubs' boards can be quite reactive. And I guess a nine-game winless run is, for some people, that's enough justification to clamour for a change. But, Rodriguez, I certainly think deserves more time. And, again, something's got to click. As you say, the squad is there. It's star-studded, and another fascinating tale of this story this season so far. That Reds and especially Kobe, as far as they've plummeted, are down in the bottom six as we approach the halfway mark of the season, which we will reach once we return from the international break. Japan playing a number of international friendlies that will be Well, we'll be reviewing as many as have been played by the time we record our next episode. Sam, we ever so briefly touched on it at the end of last week's episode. The squad announcement, there weren't any real banging stories to come out of it, were there, apart from the first call-up for I think it was Iwata, wasn't he, Hiroki Ito. So it's great for him to get a shout, having moved over to Germany. But elsewhere, I guess it was just the familiar faces that we have come to expect, and it's just a matter of how Hajime Moriyasu will attack these friendlies over the break.
Osaka didn't actually make the squad. I mean, he came back for Kobe at the weekend, so whether he'll be added at a later date, I don't know. But as of now, he's not in there. So that was a slight story, I suppose. And Daichi Kamada came back into the squad. He'd missed a couple. Obviously, he'd played very well this season for Frankfurt, won the Europa League, obviously. So he's been pretty confident that he's getting back into this team. It's just where you fit him in, because I don't think really Japan under Moriyasu actually play with his role in that number 10 position. So whether he filters out to a wing or plays deeper, I'm not sure. But yeah, there's four games here. You've got to experiment, you'd hope, in all of these. So yeah, it's just very interesting. Hiroki Ito is just a real story. I mean, because I think he was at Nagoya and then never really did a lot and went out on loan to Jubilo. Kind of had a very decent season, but not necessarily. I didn't hear anything that was saying, like, this is the next superstar or whatnot. But he went over to Stuttgart. They wanted him for their youth team. And then in one season, he's pulled himself into a guaranteed starter in that team. It's just absolutely fantastic for him. So I'm looking forward to seeing a lot more of him in action. I mean, yeah, if Japan can have another good centre-back to go with Tomiyasu and Itakura, and obviously Yoshida is still there. And yeah, it's a great option to have. So yeah, I'm looking forward to these games. I think the Brazil game obviously is the one that most people will be looking forward to. It's obviously the closest test that Japan will have to games against Spain and Germany at the World Cup. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Japan can cope with that sort of level of team and where they're at, and how good Moriyasu's style of play is going to match up against that sort of attacking quality team. So yeah, looking forward to it. And it's also nice just to have a bit more of an easier time for the next few weeks as well.
Yeah, I reckon. Obviously the J1 schedule has been pretty unrelenting, and yeah, you've had a lot of work to do and a lot of goals to cover, and it's been a bit manic, hasn't it, the last two or three match days. So it's good to draw our breath as we practically hit the halfway point of the season, just one match day away from it, of course, listeners. Of course, keeping in mind that after last Wednesday's postponement, Gamba and Hiroshima have a game in hand as well. But so to mark the almost halfway point of the J1 season, we'll be back next week with a team of the half season special. That's quickly becoming an annual tradition here at J-Talk Towers. And listeners, you know that we wouldn't want to call on anybody else's services than Johnny Nickel. So Johnny Pod himself will be back on the J-Talk airways next week to work our way through the polls that we'll be getting up for our patrons to vote on in the next few days on a number of obviously positions across the pitch. We want to get our patrons' thoughts on who they believe have been the best players of the season thus far. And then next week, Johnny, Sam and myself will go through those results and thresh out our own opinions and piece together the J-Talk J1 team of the half season. Sam, something we always look forward to, and as always, very interested to see how the patrons are going to vote on our shortlists. And always a fun time to put our team together.
Yeah, I always enjoy that. It's great to get Johnny on board. Obviously, he has got great expertise across every team in the league. And it'd be good to see everyone's opinions on this team, because obviously you kind of get stuck in your own opinion a bit, don't you, with the way you see it. So it's nice to have fresh ideas and fresh thoughts on the way the season is going. And the poll I'm absolutely looking forward to is how many votes Yuma Suzuki manages to get in the strikers poll, because I don't imagine he's going to win many popularity contests, but who knows?
Yeah, well, obviously a terrific striker, but yeah, not everybody's cup of tea. We'll wait and see how the patrons vote on the forwards. Yeah, so we'll be getting our polls out on a position by position basis, hopefully starting on Tuesday, and then yeah, running through the weekend, and well, yeah, we might even do a couple each day later on in the week if yeah, we need to catch up and give the patrons enough time to vote before we record our next episode. So yeah, as you said, mate, you can take a deep breath here and decompress for a little while after a couple of massive match days, and yeah, looking forward to the internationals, obviously.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it doesn't really stop. We've obviously got the Emperor's Cup, a full round starting on Wednesday. That's always exciting. A few cup sets there. I mean, yeah, what if Kobe go out of the Emperor's Cup? That would be very interesting for obviously their plans to get into the Asian Champions League again. So, yeah, I always enjoy that. We've got the Levain Cup playoff stages are starting on Saturday. So it's never really a full week off in Japan. But, yeah, it's going to be a nicer schedule.
Most definitely. All right, then. So, yeah, we mentioned that we're going to be keeping our patrons busy over the next few days. And, yeah, speaking of our patrons, it's a big shout out to Zhao, who has come on board in the past week. And Michael's rejoined us. Michael Okarinasai, great to have you back on board the good ship J-Talk. Listeners, if you'd like to get involved in supporting the J-Talk podcast from as little as a dollar, 100 yen, £1, or whichever currency you would like to donate in, please visit patreon.com/JTalkPod. All support is much appreciated by us all over all of our network of podcasts. So we'll leave it there. I think considering the fact that we went through basically two full match days of games, we've done pretty well with our timing on this episode. So we hope you've enjoyed it, listeners. And yeah, we'll be back with Johnny to piece together our J1 team of the half season in next week's episode. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J-Talk Podcast.